Hi, this is Circe Olson Westner. I'm the director of the Museum of the American Military Family in Tejeros, New Mexico, and this is our podcast, Together We Serve. I'm speaking with Dan Talley. He's an Army veteran, he's an author, and he's an Army dad. Hi, Dan.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well under the circumstances of these difficult pandemic that we're finding ourselves in.
And yeah, staying locked up in the house is not great.
Yeah, no. And so I wanted to tell our listeners that we're talking via telephone, which of course is the new normal these days.
Yeah.
So I wanted to just ask you a couple of questions, start our conversation. I understand that you served in the military for 28 years, and you're a combat veteran. You're married, a family man. You have a son. Do you have other children? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yes, I served 7 years on active duty and 21 years in the National Guard. I've been married for 32 years. Be 33 this year. We have, I have a son and a daughter. We're living. We've lost one child along the way. I've got a master's in business administration, and I have three combat deployments.
So what was your MOS?
My last MOS was combat engineer, which is what my son's was when he joined.
Okay, all right. Before we get into the meat and the potatoes of the interview, it's April. It's the month of the military child, and since you mentioned that you have children, I was wondering how your being in the service affected your kids, or what kind of characteristics have your children developed being a brat? And then we'll get back to the interview, but this is on my mind, Military Children Month.
Well, my son ended up, when he was 19 years old, joining the military as well, because of the same reason I did. We both wanted to do our part for our country. My daughter, having lived through two of my three deployments, first deployment being when my son was so young he doesn't remember, she's had to deal with a lot of it, but overall it's been good for her, I would say.
Yeah. You know, military service runs in the family, as you alluded to by saying you joined and then your son joined. Are you a brat by any chance?
I am not. The last person in my direct ancestral line to serve left the South and fought for the North during the Civil War. So my dad was a pastor, so we moved around a bit as a child, but he never served in the military.
But
nor did my mom.
But you know, some of those characteristics that our military brats have, a pastor's kid or a missionary's kid would have too, the moving, the having to represent the family and the you know, the country to strangers. So there's probably some parallels there.
Oh, absolutely. My dad told me several times when I was growing up, you can't do that because people might look at me differently as a pastor. And, you know, a lot of military kids get that from their parents. We don't do that because we are X, Y, or Z.
Right.
So it does play into how you develop as a child.
Yeah. Well, speaking of families and family affairs, you're an author. You wrote a book called The Stand, and that seemed to be pretty much a family effort. There was input from your wife and from other people. So give us a really short overview of the book and your inspiration for writing it, and then we're going to double back later on again. So the book is called The Stand. What does that mean? And a little bit about it.
Okay, The Stand, short for Afghanistan, of course. And as I was preparing for my third deployment with the Mississippi National Guard, my son dropped out of college and joined my unit so he could go with me. His best friend since kindergarten, basically a second son to me, also dropped out of college and joined our unit. And the three of us went to Afghanistan together to search for IEDs and perform route clearance operations. The book is told, that journey is told through our post-deployment individual marital counseling sessions and discussions that we as a family had after going through that, as well as flashbacks and memories and those kinds of things to share how we got to that journey and that kind of thing.
Huh.
We shared our story because we hoped to give people a deeper understanding of spouses with their military member with their spouses, because our spouses go through an awful lot through all of this, as well as our children,
right,
who have a lot of things in them through these experiences as children at home or as a child who goes with you to combat, that we may or may not recognize. And we hope that we would assist people in understanding and recognizing some of those things. But more importantly, we wanted to remove stigma of seeking help for our issues. And in an experience like ours, and in most military families, the spouse, the children, as well as the deployed military member, all have things that they need to work through.
Well, you know, that's so, I'm glad you said that, because the premise of our whole museum is that to understand history fully, the military family is also going through that same history, but they're seeing it through a different lens. So I'm glad you mentioned that, because we started our museum, the Military Family Museum, because we wanted to show a complete picture of history. We wanted people to know what the spouses, the kids, the parents, the extended family goes through. So that, so thank you for that. That was awesome. But the second thing is, I am surprised, well, maybe not with the National Guard, but I was kind of surprised that you and your son would be in the same place at the same time. You know, I keep thinking of the Sullivans and the Navy and, you know, them dying together. So is that something that happens frequently in the National Guard, or?
Well, in our unit specifically, we had, I think it was two sets of brothers and, two pairs of father-sons. And three sets of brothers, and then some cousins and that kind of thing thrown in.
Wow.
The regulation that governs whether a father, son, or mother, daughter serve, mother, son, or what have you, serve together in the same unit in a combat environment, it tends to flip-flop back and forth about every 2 to 2.5 years.
Mm.
So when my son was attempting to join, my commander and I discussed it, and at that time the regulation stated that it was up to the local commander based on considerations of good order and discipline. So we went with it.
So that kind of leads into the next question. So now we know how, you know, you handled the beginning part where you had a conversation. But when you were there, you were both in Afghanistan, could he call you dad, or did he have to call you by your rank and name? Did you guys avoid each other? Were you right next to each other? How did that work?
It was crazy. I mean, a deployment where you deal with 72 IEDs and an equal number of troops and contact situations, be they firefights or mortar strikes or what have you, you have a bit of stress.
Mm.
You throw your own child in the middle of it, and that increases it a bit. In the stand, we share discussions of dad slash platoon sergeant with private first class slash son, and when we were alone, we would blend those, and my son would ask questions that any private would ask, but he was given the opportunity to talk to dad about it in combat while we were there. And I was on my third deployment, so I had a different perspective than he. It was strange. For the month of December on our deployment year, 2010, I led his platoon in combat with him as his platoon sergeant was gone home on R&R leave.
Mm.
So that was interesting. But watching the back head of my son as he enters a house to clear it for insurgents on my order is a
I cannot imagine. Well, let's just see how your wife handled this. So as an Army wife and mom, I have experienced my husband and son deploying to war, but they weren't doing it at the same time. So here's your poor wife at home. Not only did she have to worry about you, she had to worry about your son, and she had to hold the whole home together. How did she handle it? How did this work? And, you know, I wish I had her on the phone, but let's...
Yeah. Well, I have an amazing wife. Let me say that up front. Mm. I mean, 2005, I was in Iraq while she took care of our kids and everything through Katrina, almost wiping out our state and mm-hmm. New Orleans, et cetera.
Oh, yeah.
So she dealt with all of that in 2005. In 2010, it started off with... I knew our rotation was coming around. We were probably going to deploy, and I was at a point I could have retired and not deployed. Mm. And instead, I stayed in and took my son with me. So we had some issues between us, but her ability to maintain herself, deal with our daughter having surgery, and then some issues that came up after resulting in emergency room visits. She had a lot of prayer. Our church family helped her. I prayed for her. I tell you, it's only by the grace of God that she's still my wife, to be honest.
Yeah.
But she's an amazing woman, and it's been a very long road for her. That's why I wanted to include some of her statements and perspectives in our marital counseling sessions in the text, because as you say with your museum, the veteran goes through a lot, but he brings a lot of that home to his wife, who's also gone through a lot. So it's all part and parcel, and we have to put it all on the table if we're going to move forward.
Well, you know, that makes a good point. I was interviewing a mother and her son. The mother was in a small rural town here, and she had no support whatsoever. She was like, her son was the only person around in the military. She didn't know about the Blue Star Mother. She had nobody to talk to. She had little kids at home, and then her oldest deployed to combat. And she got sucked into watching CNN, you know, almost 24/7. She made herself absolutely, you know, beside herself. And then she had her own PTSD. And then he comes home with his PTSD, and they had no support whatsoever. It's a scary and horrifying story that she told. And so I'm glad to hear that. Well, and you know, then the National Guard, because sometimes they're so spread out over the state, they don't have their built-in support like a base, you know, like a living on post.
Right.
Yeah, and then you had a church, your wife had a church family, but it would be horrifying to have children, husbands, and then all this. I mean, during Katrina, I don't know what I would have done. So.
Yeah, she amazes me at the things she's been able to do, and knowing that she would be here when I got back helped me mm-mm. through so much, you know. But the National Guard, we got back, and half of my troops were demobilized and gone home within 3 days from a deployment where our post-deployment site, our demobilization site, reserved 5 days in the psychiatric department for only us because of the deployment we went through.
Mm-hmm.
And then 3 days later, these guys show up at home, and they don't see each other for a month or more. Their wife hasn't seen anybody else who's dealing with a husband that showed up like this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad to say my wife is part of some online and Facebook spouse support groups and caregiver groups and those kinds of things, and it's so critical to take care of the spouses who take care of us.
Right.
And I hope that through your organization and others, we'll have more support for the children as well.
Well, we're trying we also have a collaborative out here in the East Mountains. We live outside of Albuquerque, and the museum's out here. And we've been looking at rural veterans and some of the issues that they're facing, because And so we've been, our collaborative has been working on town hall meetings on suicide prevention and substance abuse and outreach and benefits and all that. So we're looking at the rural veteran, which of course is different than the urban veteran and their families, because it is hard. And to be in combat and then after only 5 days go home and expect life to go back to normal obviously isn't going to work. And so, you know, so tell a little bit about the reintegration. Was it rough for you guys, you with your family, your son? But before that, did you end up getting medevaced back early and you're leaving your son in the combat field?
I was medevaced to Germany from Afghanistan, leaving my son and as a platoon sergeant, my men, which are extended children, if you will.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In Afghanistan, still working and finding bombs, etc. I spent almost a month in Germany, which the policy says after 2 weeks, if you're not taken care of and go back to work, you're shipped home.
Mm-hmm.
I fought really hard in Germany, and without my knowledge, I managed to get back to Afghanistan without being released to do so. It was only at the DMOB site that I found out that the psychiatric folks said, no, he can't go back. But leaving them there, and we lost one of my NCOs died while I was in Germany, so that was hard.
Yeah.
And if I'm honest now, I did lie about a few things to the medical people in Germany because I was not going to come back to the States with my men still in combat.
Yeah.
On the other side of that, my son had to deal with my dad's gone, and I'm still here.
Yeah.
That didn't help when I sent him pictures of sushi from Germany on Facebook. But yeah, you got to rub his nose in it a little.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I think what you went through with, it's not survivor's guilt, but it's guilt because you're not back there with your people. And so you feel bad because you're safe in a hospital in Germany and they're still in harm's way. And so there's the myriad of I've got to get better to help them. But then there's the I've got to get better for myself. And it's a push-pull kind of thing.
Absolutely. That's what kept me going and not retiring before that deployment.
Right.
I was still able to do my part. I couldn't see my troops at the time going without me. I think that drives a lot of veterans.
Right. Was your son married or did he have a girlfriend at this time?
He had a girlfriend when he went to basic, got a Dear John letter in basic training. So he didn't have anybody romantically back here while he was gone.
Yeah, because I was just trying to think, you know, if there was some sort of, you know, then you guys pulled together, but okay. But you both made it back to the States and you got reunited with mom and with your wife and your daughter. And so I'm assuming that the reintegration was kind of rough based on what we heard, what you have already said. You know, you lost troops, war and all that. So tell a little bit about the reintegration.
Reintegration was not good for us, for any of my troops, but specifically for my family. I came home, was on leave from the military for a period of time, and then tried to go back to work as an assistant dean at a community college. I couldn't fake it till I made it anymore. My breakdown was pretty bad, and within a year of our return in 2011, I was medically retired. So I'm not going back to life as it was. So my 10-year-old daughter at the time had to figure out who is dad. He doesn't go to work anymore. My wife had more time with me in the house, and I'm not who I once was, so we had a lot of things going on there. And my son, as a lot of us soldiers do, after a deployment, we delve into a bottle or other behaviors and try and just suck it up and drive on.
Right.
And he did that for a number of years. As I said, we got back early 2011. He was medically retired for some of my same issues in January, and now we are both on collecting 100% from the VA. So our reintegration was horrible. My wife and I had scheduled marital counseling and individual counseling before I even made it back to the United States, because we'd been through two deployments. We knew we were going to have to. My son did not seek help that soon, which a lot of us don't. So reintegration was bad. I am happy to say that we've only lost two of our comrades since we got back from this trip. We lost more after others, but it's been a hard one.
Yeah, I've something similar from my son's unit as well. Enough, more than too many, have committed suicide or have done self-harm since they returned from their deployments as well. So I wanted to say that I was quite impressed that you already knew ahead of time that you were going to want to seek help, because there are a lot of people that don't recognize that, like the denial, or they refused to. And so I thought that was really cool of you to decide already ahead of time, this is what we're going to do. I think that's commendable, and it shows, I don't want to say maturity, but it shows maturity. So your book, getting back to the stand then, your book is full of thoughts and notes from therapy sessions and journal entries, really, really intimate stuff. And so why did you want to include such personal things like that instead of, you know, a different tone, a different tenor?
Our own experience with father and son deploying together is a bit unique. It's not as common as your regular deployments, but what my daughter went through, what my wife went through, the feelings that we all have, the feelings and emotions and perspectives that my son had on his first deployment and I had on my third, and we all had trying to reintegrate and refigure out who we are and all of those kinds of things, are common to military families. And we wanted to share those in the hopes of, in one part, helping military families themselves understand each other and spot these things in their child or in their wife or in the veteran. But more importantly, our real goal was to put these out as, hey, because of these, we sought help, and try and destigmatize psychiatric care, seeking assistance for your issues. And we've seen some success with some of that. So that's kind of why we put so much out there. Yeah, but not a lot of three-time combat veterans will put in a book that they cried.
Yeah. Well, you know, you don't know, but our museum made a short music documentary where we had some Gold Star family members and some veterans talking about the effects of PTSD and veteran suicide on their immediate families. And we had a veteran who saw that film. He got a little offended that we focused on these topics. He said it stereotypes combat veterans, and, you know, people, that's all people think about with combat veterans is the problems. And I was a little taken aback by that. But I wanted to know, have you ever gotten pushback from people about being that honest and that in your face kind of with your book?
I have not gotten that type of pushback. I had some, I had a little bit of negative comments from some people, but I haven't gotten that type of pushback. And I'm sorry to say that in our society, we have people who, when you share your story or you share other people's stories that have common themes or common experiences and those kinds of things. There are people who label it as a stereotype, label it as negative or what have you, and they miss the point. They miss the intent of telling the story, as well as how that story may be able to help them. We, not all children of military people come out exactly the same.
Right, right.
We're not, they're not in lockstep. Not all military experiences are the same. But I have troops who've gone left and gone right and gone forward and gone backwards and all different types of experiences since we got back. We have common experiences. We have common emotions. We have abandonment issues. We have fears. We have all of this stuff to deal with. But how we deal with it is as different as our fingerprints.
Right.
But it's okay to talk about we've had to deal with this and put it out there. And it bothers me sometimes that we even fellow veterans come out negative when we're trying to do some positive things. But, you know, it happens.
Well, so speaking of positive, then, have you heard from anybody who's read your book and said, wow, this was helpful, this was inspirational, this makes it okay for me to talk about it or try to get help? Have you had any, you know, good feedback or based on people experiencing it?
Well, I'll try and keep it brief because I really get excited about this part. But a VA worker in at a VA hospital in Texas said they have more understanding and compassion for the people they deal with after reading our book. I have a husband and wife that I talked to, both of them, and she said she understood him more, and he agreed to seek help and go to counseling with her after reading our book. A psychiatrist in Colorado said she had been treating PTSD people for 4 years, and she learned so much in the first chapter that she used my book as a subject matter for a seminar at a convention.
Wow!
So we have received a lot of positive feedback that it's done some of the things that we had hoped it would.
Well, and I imagine it was also part of your healing and your wife's healing, your whole family's healing as well. I keep reading articles about journaling being helpful for people with PTS, people, you know, even in this pandemic, people should be journaling, writing it down. It helps to get ideas and emotions and things. Did you find the book itself, writing the book itself, was therapeutic?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when I hit my breakdown, I saw my psychologist every day for an hour and a half to 2 hours for 12 weeks. Then we cut back to 3 days a week and went on from there. I saw a Christian counselor once a week for several months. But therapy and what I have experienced is rethinking our perspectives to some degree on our experiences. And as I wrote the book and rewrote it and edited it and the whole nine yards over 3 or 4 years it took to get it done, I had to revisit a lot of the things that keep me up at night. Some that I included, some that I took out, et cetera, et cetera. And it was very therapeutic, and it did help me to back up and look at it rather than re-experience it as much as I had been.
You acknowledge that you have a very strong faith, a good, you know, Christian root. How has that helped you with, you know, your whole experience?
Well, I was raised by a Christian pastor. So that's part of how I was raised. My return from Afghanistan this time, everything was jerked out from under me. My basis for being did not work anymore. And I researched many religions and philosophies and the whole nine yards as I went through that. But my Christian faith and my belief in God has helped me along the way, in from being embedded with an Iraqi platoon in Iraq, and they kick the door in and the guns are going off and I have to be the second guy in, and just saying, Lord, help me, and going on with it, to God telling my wife to stay with me when she was done with it. Our Christian walk has been with us all throughout and has made a huge difference for us.
I just wanted to give you a few minutes because we're going to have to wrap it up. So what else would you like to tell listeners about your book, about your faith, about your family, anything you'd like in the next couple of minutes?
If you get shaky around people, if you don't understand your spouse after a deployment, whether you be the spouse or the vet, if you're not seeing things the way you used to, if you're like me and you get frustrated counting change at the counter at trying to buy a pack of cigarettes or a cold drink, get some help. You might have some stress and anxieties, some memories, some things that you need to talk through. We fought hard. All of us did. Men, women, Navy, Air Force, Coast Guard, Army, everybody. We fought hard for this country. So do what you have to now to embrace the life you fought to defend. And I guess that's what I've got to say.
That was really good. That was very profound. So where can people find your book? Give us like a website, or how do we find it? Give us the name, the publisher, whatever you would like.
Okay. Yeah, it's The Stand by Dan Talley. We have a website, dantalley.org, TALLEY.org. You can find us on Books A Million, Barnes & Noble, most of your major book distributors. So if you do a search for The Stand, Dad, Son, Finding Bombs, by Dan Talley, you'll find us out there.
Well, I did see it on Amazon as I was preparing for this interview, so it's out there. So it was really good talking to you, and I really appreciate your candor and your your devotion to this subject. It's hard to talk about. It's hard to hear. And so I appreciate your spending a little bit of time with us today. And so I just wanted to once again wrap up by saying that this has been Circe Wessner, the director of the museum in Tijeras, and this was our podcast, Together We Serve, and I've been speaking with Dan Talley, a veteran and author, and a really good resource to people. And I'm sure that there's a contact on your website, so if people have more questions, they can reach out to you, right?
Oh, yeah, and we've got The Stand is on Facebook as well. They can hit us up there.
Okay, great. Well, listen, it's been wonderful talking with you, and I wish you a really good day.
And you as well. Thanks for having me.